All of the major players were at the CSUN Technology Conference last week, including Microsoft and Freedom Scientific, and we're joined for a bit of a catch-up session by representatives of those two companies. Madeline Bryant-McIntyre is the Director of Accessible Technology for Microsoft, and most Main Menu listeners have their lives impacted by Microsoft in some way or another. Also, Eric Damry joins us. He's the Product Manager for JAWS for Windows at Freedom Scientific. Great to have you both here. This interview is recorded at the time that CSUN is progressing. Madeline, can we start with you and talk about what Microsoft is most proud of that you're exhibiting at CSUN?
I think the thing we're most proud of is the partnerships we've been able to establish with assistive technology vendors. Historically, the relationships between Microsoft and AT vendors weren't always good, and I don't think we appropriately valued them. And one of the things that we've really worked on with the XP launch is to include vendors in a much more productive and proactive way and to really help them launch their products on XP. And so we have another wave of products going out on XP that is yet another set. This is the third wave of products going out on XP, and it's a direct result of the partnership that we've established with the vendors. So we're very proud of that.
What kinds of things can we expect in this third wave?
Well, we have some products from some of the smaller companies, Medentech, Words Plus, ATI, and ScanSoft are all announcing their products on XP. And I think that will make a much more rounded set of product offerings on XP. Some of the leaders had previously announced and were out weeks or months ago. Now some of the other products coming out will make satisfy the needs of a larger number of our customers.
When people develop assistive technology for a Microsoft operating system like XP, how much of it is automatic these days? I mean, are the hooks in there, are specs available, or is it actually quite a close dialogue on a case-by-case basis between Microsoft and the vendor as the development goes ahead?
Well, to answer that question fully, I have to step back into the past a bit. When MSAA was created, which is a technology that some vendors use, we really didn't have that much information about how assistive technology vendors used our products and what they needed. So with MSAA, we still have quite a bit of a close relationship with the vendors to help them implement it correctly. And we also have to do that with application vendors. It requires support on both sides. So we're willing to invest that time and to make MSAA all it can be and to help vendors use it correctly and application vendors use it correctly. But it is quite an intimate relationship in some cases. As a result of that, we've actually started to evaluate how we can use developer support better and how we can use the other internal resources of Microsoft to more fully support vendors and application developers. But at this time, it does still take quite a bit of my staff, and we've actually had people come on campus for a week's duration to actually do the work to port to XP.
You must be absolutely delighted with the fact that MSAA seems to be gaining some traction outside of the standard assistive technology arena and Microsoft. I see that Macromedia Flash 6 is very impressive with its MSAA offering. Adobe Acrobat Reader 5 has been around for a while. This is good news. It's taken time, but it seems to be taking off in the mainstream now.
I think we actually have to credit 508 for a lot of that, and I think that 508 is working in this case. It's giving people a purchasing incentive. I think we have to go beyond that. I don't think that all of what we want out of assistive technology and accessibility can be accommodated through regulation. We're very committed in the coming year to really represent a stronger leader around this and help companies understand all the benefits of making their products accessible and not just the benefit of sales to the government. We know in the United States every business and every school is supposed to be accommodating people with disabilities, whether they're employees or they're students. And any time that they have difficulty with that, it could be because they either are not getting the assistive technology they need or they don't know how to use it. So more mainstream vendors with with a better accessibility story will certainly help, and it makes the platform stronger, and it makes the economy stronger.
But can a business case actually be made for accessibility outside of regulation? How can one convince maybe a small developer of software who perhaps doesn't even know that disabled people use computers that accessibility makes business sense, or can you?
I'm willing to use any leverage I can. And one thing that we have found out is that a more accessible product is also a more testable product. We've also found that a more accessible product is often a more robust product. So that kind of business data can be given to a company, no matter how small their size, to help them understand that if they build accessibility into their product, they can make it much more testable, much more robust, and they can reach consumer market segments that they may have been overlooking. Certainly the demographic information about the aging U.S. population and their use of computers is compelling if someone's looking that far out. But even in the near term, it's the largest minority group within the United States, people with disabilities. So it's unwise to ignore it. And it's very costly to go in after the fact and try and make a product accessible when it wasn't designed that way. We found that out because many of our inaccessibility areas are actually a result of legacy products that were not built for accessibility.
We've certainly come a long way since those rather depressing days of the release of Internet Explorer version 4, and sometimes we forget how far we've come. But there are still patches of inaccessibility at Microsoft. I guess I look at the Encarta product, for example, and a few other CD-ROM titles out there, mainly recreational ones, I guess. What can be done about that? Is that going to change in the near future, do you think?
Not as quickly as I would like, but I think there's always the chance that people will get it. In the case of Encarta, the team cares a great deal about overcoming the accessibility issues, but it is a case where the product was designed before the team was really aware of what accessibility meant, especially in market segments like in schools, which is actually a large part of Encarta's sales at this point. So they do know how serious the issues are, and now they just have to figure out how to get it done and not undermine the product's quality. Whenever you go back in after something has been built, if it wasn't constructed the right way to begin with, you're at risk of destabilizing the product to fix it. And so that's the kind of trade-offs that they're making. If it were easy fixes, they would have done it a long time ago. That team really wants to fix their accessibility issues, and the company would really like to see that product be fully accessible. But the trade-off now is, will this actually undermine the product's quality? And they're willing, actually, in some cases, to redesign and rewrite from scratch, and we're seeing some of that within that product.
Yeah, new products are certainly quite impressive. I keep looking back at MSN Explorer, for example, which is quite remarkable in its accessibility. MSN Messenger does pretty well. So things are looking good with the newer stuff that's coming out of the Microsoft stable.
I think we're able now to get a really solid message in front of innovative teams, so that they understand what they need to do to build accessibility into a 1.0 product. We won't always get it right. The way Microsoft builds products is often by creating a small team that is allowed to innovate without restraint, so that we can actually have a solid culture of innovation that builds new ideas. But those teams are often now being managed by people who have had direct accessibility experience or who were involved in situations where we made mistakes, and so they learned from those. And so we see more and more of a culture of accessibility being developed. So even small startup ventures within Microsoft are doing it right from the beginning. But that doesn't mean they always will. I would love if Xbox had been accessible from the beginning, but that's a very difficult culture to penetrate with accessibility.
Sure, and actually that leads me nicely into my next line of questioning, which really relates to non-PC devices, or what we would traditionally call the PC. What do you think can be done about gaining access to these appliances? Because we're now getting into third generation cellular, for example, where all sorts of web surfing and streaming media is going to happen over cellular phones. Can Microsoft do anything positive in that area?
We've actually done some work in that area, and accessibility was a requirement for the product. I don't know if that's a product area that we're really going to invest in. I think that's something where we may step back from that investment. I'm not sure of the status of that right now, so I can't speak to it very well. If I look at products that I know will be launched and their launch plans are clear and in the immediate future, one example of what you're speaking to is the tablet PC.
Hmm.
Tablet PC is a form factor that has it as its premise the tablet that you would write notes on. It's like a piece of writing paper or a tablet you'd carry. It has very excellent handwriting recognition. And that addresses a large category of accessibility needs of people who may have difficulty with keyboards, and then certainly brings up a bunch of accessibility issues for vision impaired and people who will not be able to use the handwriting paradigm. However, the tablet will run a normal screen reader. It's a full PC, and you can plug a keyboard into it. So it is lighter and smaller and a little bit more ruggedized than a laptop. So it does have the ability to be accessible, but it also addresses some accessibility issues in a particular area of the market, which is carpal tunnel and RSI, where people have developed problems as a result of the keyboard, and the handwriting model is actually much better for them.
Can we talk about Windows CE, and in particular the Braille Note product from Pulse Data? Because about a year and a half ago, I think, there was a media release from both Microsoft and Pulse Data saying that an agreement had been reached for Pulse Data to provide access to ebooks on the Braille Note, and presumably that would give speech and Braille access to a resource that potentially could change the world for blind people in terms of accessing absolutely up-to-date information, reading it at the same time as a sighted person. But we haven't actually seen that come to market yet. Are you able to tell us where that's at right now?
That group actually, a little bit of their business model was re-examined, and they were placed into a different team. The team that created the eBooks products is now organized in the same parent team as accessibility. And they're actually going back and looking at their business strategy and rethinking how they'll deliver their products. So it's not really something that was anticipated at the time that original agreement was struck. But as they rolled their product out, it met the market with sort of an underwhelming reaction. And so they have since kind of reevaluated where that product fits in the Microsoft product line. And there will be new products that come out from that team, but I think they'll be much more integrated into our product line rather than the way we were doing it with the reader product.
So specifically with respect to the Braille Note device, does that mean that will no longer be likely to do ebooks?
We're still interested in seeing that happen. But that product team is actually not shipping on the cycle they were on before.
Okay.
Their whole ship cycle has been altered by basically a reevaluation of their business plan.
I'd like to talk about XP because Eric Damry from Freedom Scientific is with us, and I want to bring him in. Can I ask you first, Madeline, about the one thing that we're all struggling with under XP? And I have to say, I think XP for me has been the best upgrade of an operating system I've done since upgrading to 95. It's got a lot going for it. But the big problem, of course, is for people like me who review software and are constantly installing and uninstalling bits of assistive technology, it's very easy to get your system in one heck of a state. And I understand that a protocol is under development that might address the whole question of chaining of video device drivers. Are you able to comment on that?
Yes, we actually do have some work that's been completed and is in test for that. And that was actually based on a specification that we brokered, but it was a specification developed by the assistive technology vendors themselves. We actually have helped to have that become a reality, and we will provide means of having it distributed. But it's really, we played the role as facilitator and broker in that and have tried to just help the assistive technology vendors do what they believed was the right thing to do to fix that issue. So I'm hoping that we, once that fix is out and can be used by vendors, that it'll be widely adopted and those problems will go away for certainly some period of time. Technology will always bring these kinds of issues up. But I think we can have periods of kind of a stair-step improvement, if it were that we can fix some problems, and then, of course, we'll encounter some new ones and we'll fix them. But I think you'll see more about that probably in the coming weeks after we get the current product through test, the current fix through test.
Excellent. And Eric Demery, always good to speak with you. Are you guys on board with this, with the new specs for product chaining, video chaining?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you, Jonathan. I'm glad to be here today. We have been working closely with the group, and I won't speak for each and every vendor, but I can say with pretty good confidence that everyone is right in line and ready to go. I think we're waiting for some final go-ahead from Microsoft that everything is ready to go. Our testing on our side has proven that it looks good. I think it's going to be important to also make sure that this not be just something left to the access technology vendors, of course. There's a lot of work to do once we get this out there. This is really stage one, getting it in our hands, getting the spec done, getting the implementation in place so that access technology, you know, products can live in an educational environment on the same machines, in a work environment on the same machines, and in test labs on the same machines. But it's really going to be critical that we get other mainstream developers in line with this and considering this as we go forward.
So what will this protocol mean to the end user? Does it essentially just mean that you can install and uninstall without really worrying about the order in which things happens?
Yeah, that would be the objective, is that they're not going to step on one another, let's call it. When one product gets installed, and uninstalled, it will not hurt things or block things for the other product.
Why is this an issue? I mean, why wasn't it an issue under 95, 98 Millennium, and it's an issue under XP?
Well, Madeline might speak to it better. I'll take a layman's approach to it. Under the NT, under the NT 2000 XP world, we have to insert ourselves inside of the video chain, and there was no eloquent way of doing that. And literally, as access technology vendors and not wanting to wait and being the pioneers that we are, we tended to hack into the operating system or the video chain. And this was not necessarily the requirement under 98 for us to do that. We were able to catch it at a different level.
Do you have anything?
One of the reasons that is true is that the design of the Windows operating system pre-XP and really pre-Windows 2000 was much more of a hobbyist operating system. There was much less concern about security, and the model for drivers was much more open. With Windows 2000 and XP, how drivers are intended to run on the system and how data is intended to flow through the system is much more restricted, and the hack, as Eric says, and I wouldn't describe it as hack so much, but attempts to find ways to make it work, I would say, creative solutions rather than hacks, were much more likely to fail just because of the narrowness of the opportunities to grab that kind of information. Much more restricted in places where you could grab it, and you're much more vulnerable because of the security and other things, much more vulnerable to having someone else interfere with what you're trying to do.
I'd like to talk to both of you about MSAA and get your views on one question that's come up a couple of times, and Eric and I have spoken about this before through, I guess, my questions on this, that MSAA is obviously giving information to the screen reader vendor and the assistive technology product much more readily. There's a lot less dependency on graphics, which can be dependent on color resolution and all sorts of things. But one of the downsides of that is that at the moment it seems that MSAA has a tendency to impose a kind of one screen reading solution fits all model. In other words, if you're in a product like Outlook, for example, there's not a lot of control anymore when one uses MSAA over whether you're going to hear specific indicators spoken, like whether the message is read or unread, whether there's an attachment, all of those things. Whereas using the graphics labeling method, you could unlabel those graphics if you chose to, if it was too verbose. Is this something that's of concern to either of you, and how might that issue be addressed to give a more flexible screen reading solution?
I think we have actually learned a lot from MSAA. Maybe the best thing about MSAA is it's given us a chance to try and work on an interface with the vendors. The prior mechanisms, really, the vendors created on their own, excuse me, and it wasn't a collaborative thing because they had, you know, predated most of Microsoft's awareness about AT. With MSAA, we've learned a lot of the gaps, and we've also learned that trying to be too specific about the kind of information we provide is a failing. So I think any follow-on to MSA, which we hope to have one relatively soon, I would say the next 3 or 4 years, will be much richer information, much more at the control of the AT vendor, but not at the low level of the graphics specifically, because in a world of web services, that really is quite altered. What a client machine looks like is very different, for instance. It may not be a rich client. It could be a pocket PC, or it could be something coming to you through terminal services. So the kind of future that we imagine is an interface rather than the raw kind of data coming directly from the graphics device interface. But it is also one that is much richer and has much more control for the AT vendors.
I think getting the information from MSAA or from an object model or from an off-screen model, from a vendor standpoint, and Jonathan, as you know, a company like Freedom Scientific or Henner Joyce prior to Freedom Scientific, we were very concerned in getting the information and determine and giving us the ability to determine how to deliver, or giving the user the ability to manipulate how they receive the information, because each user uses it in a different way, and so you don't want to just, you know, throw a whole bunch of information to them. It's got to be broken up. You've got to give the user control over how they receive it, and MSAA and other technologies are not necessarily designed for very specific users. They're designed for, MSAA in the case is designed for providing disability community the information, various products. Now, as we start to see MSAA evolve and become a product that is used in the testing environment by mainstream as well, I think that this opens up other opportunities for them to really increase the robustness of it, and as we see these tools become more robust, it's going to benefit the screen reader companies and other companies in the AT community that want to deliver the information to the users in the best way we know how, and we do know best.
All right. Are you showing anything new in the JAWS line at CSUN, Eric, or are you sort of between cycles right now?
No, actually, I guess at the time that this airs, we will have finally released 4.02 as a official release. My goal is, and now you'll all know if it didn't make it, last Thursday we should have had a public posting, final release of version 4.02, and I have brought many hundreds of CDs to the show, so if you were one of the people attending CSUN 2002 this year, came to the JAWS 4.02 presentation, I handed out CDs there for everyone to get. We're on to the next cycle, looking forward to a summer release, and I'll tell you, it's been a whirlwind year with this product. I'm just really excited about the things we've been able to address for the web, for the operating systems, and for office products.
Now, you know, our listeners would be very disappointed if I didn't ask you, what sort of wonderful things might we expect in the next major release of JAWS?
Well, we're going to continue to address several areas. One is going to be MSAA. As a matter of fact, we're going to go back and As you know, we took the object model approach years ago and went after Microsoft Office and the professional type applications with that. We're going to back up and readdress some of the issues in MSAA and get the Flash side of things going. We're also going to get tables and PDF working. We're going to continue to work on the Office suites, both on the Microsoft side and on other applications. We've been doing a lot of work on Lotus recently and other applications, so we'll continue on that. I think we're also going to continue to develop on the Java side, so I think we'll see some further growth and development in that arena.
One of the things I regret losing, the only real thing I regret losing about the XP upgrade, is some of the old external synthesizers that Jaws used to support are not supported in XP NT 2000 anymore. Is that something that you ever considered addressing?
Well, it's something that I think would be beneficial to many users if it could be addressed. Now, in order to make that happen, it's simply a matter of getting a driver spec out to someone to write the drivers for those synthesizers, and that is a possibility. We may want to talk with some of the hardware synthesizer manufacturers and see if we can get them to work with us to go out to the users and see if someone out there wants to throw a driver together that we could then include. We don't get a lot of requests for it ourselves internally in comparison to getting applications working. So it isn't something that we pull our software engineers off of developing JAWS to go back and develop drivers for older synthesizers.
So it may be that people are just accepting it as a fait accompli, but if they send a message to the suggestions address, then it might go higher up the priority list.
Yes, this may be something we can get a grassroots level going on the users list to see if we can form some people together to decide, you know, we'd really like to see the synthesizer work, and as a group we'll go forth and be happy to work with those groups and see if we can organize something to get those hardware synthesizer drivers working, and I'll certainly get them included.
Good. Our time is just about up. Can I just close by asking you, Madeline, the Narrator product, which made its debut in 2000 and is in all editions of Windows XP, is that pretty much frozen in terms of its feature set, or are you looking at expanding that in future releases of XP?
Narrator actually will probably not be modified again until the next version of the operating system comes out, and that wouldn't be .NET Server. That would be with Longhorn as our code name for that product. It's the next generation, well out in the future. Generally, how we view Narrator is it's intended for logging in and for use when your system is giving you a fit, but it's also our internal first test case of whether the interface is working correctly. So we use it, you know, in alpha and even as in prototype state of new interfaces to see if we've got everything we need to be able to generate speech and navigate the UI. So that actually will not be revved. It has no independent life cycle beyond the interface. So it won't be revved until the interface revs. I think we're talking 2004, so.
Okay. It's a fantastic product, even in its current state, for, as you say, getting out of a bit of a bind, especially until this chaining issue is resolved. It really is very good in that regard.
Well, I'm glad it provides value.
Yeah.
I wish it didn't have to.
We'll get there. I certainly appreciate you both giving up some CSUN time to chat with us, and we'll look forward to keeping in touch with both of you in the future on Main Menu.
Great.
Very good, Jonathan. It was nice to talk to you, as usual.